of the mode of passion.
This is where we were yesterday, starting on that. That born out of hankerings and desire and lust. And Prabhupada is pretty powerful about that in the 14th chapter. He discusses the mode of passion. Actually, there always has to be some passion, otherwise you can't stay alive. I mean, to say pure ignorance is death, just, you know, total annihilation, practically. So in the 14th chapter, I always get pictures in the wrong place.
I have a question.
Yeah, just a second. I just want to find something here. Oh yeah, so here's where I just want to get where we were. He says, the whole material world is more or less in the mode of passion. Modern civilization is considered to be advanced in the standard of the mode of passion. I'm on page 688. Formerly, the advanced condition was considered to be in the mode of goodness. There is no liberation for those on that page. So formally, that's why when I went into the discussion about how there was this big shift, you know, the temporalization of the chain of being and everything, was just in talking about this particular thing. Because the advancement in the mode of goodness, the advancement of civilization, is you'll see production in literature, art, intellectual things, or you'll see economic stagnation. You won't see so much economic development. Economic development takes place as a consequence of the world of passion. Okay, now go ahead. Got a question?
Yeah, you said there has to be some amount of passion.
No, I mean to say, all I mean to say is you can't be purely in the mode of ignorance. There has to be a root of some passion, you know. If someone purely in the mode of ignorance stops to exist. Okay, so let's go on here to this chart. The Prabhupada says this, he's bound by karma sangha, by fruit of work. Or conditioned by the fruit of work. Another sign of the mode of passion that you can recognize is just restlessness. There was a soap opera called The Young and the Restless. So, restlessness. They can't sit still. Always got to be moving, you know. A dead giveaway, and sometimes you're talking to people and they start doing like this all the time, you know? Like shaking their legs back and forth, the right face, you know? That little sort of agitation you're going on, this mode of passion. You know? So it may not even be manifested directly as sex desire, but it's there just, we got to do something, get out there, go restless, 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 you know? Both goodness and ignorance have this in common, is that there's no restlessness. That's trying to counteract it. That's trying to counteract the mode of ignorance and the mode of passion. So this restlessness, this constant pinprick of agitation to be active, is the action of the mode of passion. So it binds by material fruit of actions. Karma sangha. Sangha means by association with karma, with fruit of work. So that the psychological type, active. General character is given in the Bhagavatam. He works hard to acquire prestige and fortune. And he experiences anger, and trouble. So we see a little later on down the chart, the result of the mode of passion is misery. And we'll discuss a little bit of why that is. But he experiences anxiety and struggle. Because a person in the mode of passion has embarked on the project of controlling material nature. This is a losing battle. And therefore, there's always going to be anxiety and there's always going to be struggle. That's one reason, because he's trying to control material nature. The other reason is that he's always dissatisfied. It says it's born out of hankering, Trishna Sangha Samudbhava. That means the activities of the mode of passion do not bring release from hankering. That when desires are fulfilled, the characteristic of the mode of passion is it increases desires. If you passionately want to make $1 million and you have $1 million, you passionately want two. So they're always increasing. If you build a mile-high skyscraper, you go to the moon, next you want to go to Mars. You build a mile-high building, you're planning 2 miles. Whatever is big, you got to do bigger, better, greater. Always surpassing. This is the nature of the mode of passion. It does not ever rest. So there's no peace. You're always being goaded on and on and on. Well, you know, Prabhupada had said, actually, I was sitting in the temple room in New York when he said to the devotees, you should go out with the desire to distribute thousands of books and not be disturbed if you don't distribute one. That's what he said. But then the preaching came down later on that you were supposed, if you didn't distribute, you know what, you were supposed to be disturbed because you had a quota and you had to meet your quota and you were kicked off the bus and didn't get the maha plate and so many other things. But Prabhupada's actual teaching was you should go out there and you should have the desire. See, not to put, mode of ignorance is, you see, the mode of ignorance is you won't have the desire. You go out there and you stand in the street corner, you watch the butterflies, you watch the, you know. The mode of passion is that if you fail to make, you know, what your desire is, you become all agitated and upset and foaming at the mouth and everything like that. The mode of goodness is you go out there with a desire and you depend upon Krishna for the results. So that if it doesn't happen, you still have your desire. It doesn't mean, oh, it's useless, it's hopeless, I can't do it. You still don't. So what Krishna consciousness calls for is sometimes the endeavor or the drive of somebody who is in the mode of passion, but without the attachment to the result. Yeah.
The 47th verse of the second chapter sums up that.
Want to read us that verse?
Yes. So, you are right for performing prescribed duty, but you're not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself to be the cause of the results of the activity, and never be attached to the duty.
See, that uses the word adhikar. You have a right. That is to say, you're authorized to do your work. Is that right? That word is there?
Yeah, command of adhikar.
So adhikar means someone who's qualified or authorized. So you're authorized. Your work, that you're means entitled. That you're entitled to your work, but you are not entitled to the results. So whatever your work is, that is to say, your work according to your psycho-physical nature under the rules of Varnashram Dharma. That's what you're entitled to. That work you can do. Never consider yourself to be the cause or the result of the work. They come from Krishna. So you don't see a causal connection. But so you do it, whether successful or not successful. That's another thing. That's not your business. That's really not your business. And you can see that's the way Srila Prabhupada was. For example, his work for many, many years was fruitless. Up until 1965, you would have said he was a flop. Because the plan was in Krishna's hands. And whatever the plan was, that was Krishna's business. But Prabhupada knew what he was supposed to be doing. So he went to Jhansi, he tried to open a temple, it failed. He tried to work with the Gaudiya Mutt, it failed. He tried so many things, it didn't work out. Things were not working out until he was 7 years old. And then bang, when Krishna wanted, because the thing you got to understand is that Krishna is in charge of timing. And you don't know what's going on. You have no idea what the Omni Super Soul is running so many things, and you don't have a full picture. And it's not always that Krishna lets you see. Well, sometimes he lets you see, sometimes he doesn't. It's up to him. But he always lets you know what you're supposed to be doing. If you're willing to do it, he'll let you know. So, anyway, that's the difference. So, for Krishna consciousness, it should be an impetus to satisfy Krishna. And Krishna is satisfied by your dedication of your activities. That's what satisfies. Charge of whatever comes out of it. Okay. So anyway, that's the general characteristic of personal devotional passion. There, one word that from modern psychology is driven. People in the mode of compassion are driven people. They're in anxiety all the time. Then he says, Prabhupada says that they manage to, they become charitable and their work will give satisfaction to others. Although themselves, they never themselves really get to enjoy their work. It's too ulcerous a condition. It's always causing ulcers, it's always causing pain, it's always causing suffering. They're going too hard. They're striving like crazy. So they don't really take satisfaction in the work. They're attached to the results. The work itself is just a means to an end. They don't care for the work itself. They want to do it. They want to see it grow, get bigger, better, more, more, more. But other people do get satisfied after they die. They get to inherit the money or whatever. Or they establish foundations or give them charity because they want to see their name up in some way. Manifestations, great attachment, fruit of activity, intense endeavor, uncontrollable desire and hankering. And very similar thing, the mental and physical symptoms Bhagavatam gives is distortion of intelligence because of too much activity. There's never a moment for calm reflection. Things are made in a hurry, and they're made swiftly. The inability of the perceiving senses to disentangle themselves from mundane objects. Let me look at this. I want to get the Sanskrit out on this one. This is page... Kurban by activity, the distortion of the intelligence, transformation of intelligence. Oh yeah, anivritti, chitta-sam. Failure to stop the conscious facilities of intelligence in the sense of chitta-sam means consciousness, the mind, the senses. In other words, you can't stop your mind from going. That's also part of the meaning of this. You can't disentangle the senses from the objects, the perceiving senses. And even your mind, you can't stop thinking. This is a driven quality. You know, it's time to go to bed, you have to knock yourself out. You can't just drop it. One thing I noticed about Srila Prabhupada was the ability to intensely get involved with the subject, and it was trying to change the subject, you set it down and went on to something else. You know, amazing ability to stop one thing and start something else. You have some big problem, it's kind of old agitation, finds the bottom cast, drops it. You know, when passionate people that is always leaking, you know, when doing something else, or being obsessed with something else. So this is, you can't withdraw your mind, you can't stop your mind from being obsessed with something, from dwelling on the sense objects, from detaching themselves. And so that's the perceiving senses, and then it says an unhealthy condition of the working senses, the working physical organs. They're unhealthy because of just too much unregulated activity. Like you run a machine at a high RPM all the time, it's going to break down. And he says, unsteady perplexity of the mind. These are the mental and physical symptoms. So you can see there the mind and the senses also. Then the qualities that are given, that show up in a person in the mode of passion, material desire, kama, great endeavor, audacity, and willing to undertake bold projects. See that mountain? Let's move it over here and take that lake over here, you know. Big engineering projects. You know? That's the American, you know, thing. It's coming to beautiful. That mountain we're going to put over here, and we'll put a dam up here and make this lake over here, you know. We're going to take this planet and let's see, we'll give it a, you know, atmosphere. We're going to bioform the whole thing, you know. Audacity. Boldness. Dissatisfaction even in gain. See, it's Trishna. What they did, of course, was Trishna just means hankering. But here, looking at what the commentators said, that means dissatisfaction even in gain. So see, the hankering in the mode of passion doesn't stop. Even in gain, Trishna is there, thirst, hankering. False pride, praying for material advancement, considering oneself different and better than others, the separatist mentality, says in the word for word. Sense gratification, and then mada utsaha, which means one way it's translated rash eagerness to fight, or courage based on intoxication. And just a sort of general boasting and belligerence. A fondness for hearing oneself praised, the tendency to ridicule others. So there's all this based there on pride. See, hasha. You know, or, you know, having a sarcastic, biting sense of humor, which is very good at an amusing way, putting everybody else down, getting everybody to laugh at them. I majored in that in college. Advertising one's own prowess, you know, the braggart, you know, and justifying one's actions by one's strength. In other words, what do you say? What's the slogan? Might makes right. Yeah, might makes right. So these are this is a constellation of qualities that will appear when somebody's in the mode of passion. The result, as we said, is misery. results in misery. Because there is no satisfaction in the mode of passion. Satisfaction really doesn't show up until you get to the mode of goodness, which results in happiness. But there's no happiness in passion.
What about someone who's influenced by the mode of passion and engaged in devotional service?
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
Anybody can engage in devotional service, whether they're in the mode of goodness, passion, or ignorance. The devotional service in the mode of passion is something else again.
Specifically the result, I mean, can...
The mode of passion itself is the result of the mode of passion is misery. It is always there. Now, if you're a passionate person and do devotional service while giving up the fruits, then that's not the mode of passion. Because you've given up. Passion means you're attached to the fruits. If you're attached to the fruits, but still you give them to Krishna, then that will not result in misery. And that's not considered to be the mode of passion. If you're serving Krishna with a motive for these things, when I'm serving Krishna so I can become famous, praised, and glorified as a great devotee, then that's devotional service in the mode of passion. That's something else again. That will result in misery. Because I will see that even though I'm getting some recognition as a great devotee, so-and-so is even greater. Or if there's enough, you know, I'll get myself in a lot of trouble. I'll create Vaishnava aparad. He's not a good devotee as I am. I'm a better devotee. I'm always comparing myself to this devotee. That, you know, what's that going to result in? It's going to result in misery. But if I am nature in the mode of passion, we'll discuss this. The transcendent situation. Arjuna, when he fought in the battle of Kurukshetra, necessarily that was a passionate activity. There's no way you're going to find a battle with a totally placid state of mind. But it was not in the mode of passion, because he was at that point simply detached. So it's as though the mind and the senses were engaged in passion, but Arjuna was not. He was existing, his consciousness was not involved in whatever passion had to take place in the mind and the senses. So you can be involved in a passionate activity, but not be in the mode of passion. Because Arjuna saw, he was as though standing neutral, watching what's happening while Krishna's conducting the battle and conducting him. That's what was going on. Anyway, we'll discuss that some more. The product of the mode of passion, so what it produces, is greed. The person in the mode of passion becomes greedier and greedier and greedier. Those who are in the mode of passion, they stay in the middle, in intermediate positions on earth. They take birth among fruitive workers or human beings, Naraloka. So this is a very interesting point. This means that hardly anyone is qualified in the mode of passion even. There's so much ignorance in present-day civilization that generally people in the mode of passion, from what I can gather from this, will follow pretty much Vedic injunctions. Now, they'll tend to excesses here and there, but Prabhupada distinctly, for example, places meat-eating in the mode of ignorance. Those who engage in meat eating do not take birth among human beings because of the unnecessary violence to others, that therefore it's in the mode of ignorance. Now, this is an interesting point, that the pure type of a passionate person is a kshatriya whose activity is battle. Yet violence is a sign, real violence is a sign of the mode of ignorance. Why is that? Because you have to look at the kind of violence. It's interesting now. You look at the kind of violence that's prevalent nowadays, which is violence in the mode of ignorance, and the kind of violence that was practiced by Kshatriyas. Violence actually practiced by the pure person in the mode of passion is chivalrous. It's fought according to rules and regulations, and there's a concern for honor and rectitude. It doesn't mean walking up to somebody in the street and blowing a pistol at the back of their head. It means violence, when a Kshatriya would resort to violence and his opponent was unarmed or asleep, he wouldn't do anything. They had a big problem in the Korean War. I remember reading that they had to redesign the sleeping bag because, you know, American soldiers would be sleeping in the sleeping bag. They get overrun by the North Koreans. And the North Koreans would be able to bayonet them because they couldn't unzip out of their sleeping bags fast enough. So they had to design the sleeping bags so you could get up, because immediately you see somebody sleeping, oh, this is my chance, you know. This is modern warfare. Modern warfare, the archetypical instance of modern warfare is that the nuclear war is that the generals in the military is safely ensconced in underground pentagons, raining a nuclear death on each other's civilian population. So don't think that those kinds of people are Kshatriyas. No, they're Shudras or best Vaishyas, because mostly economics and military procurement seems to be their favorite activity. But there may be some little bit of Kshatriya among them, but there's a concern among actual Kshatriyas that battles were fought according to chivalric rules. And that went out, you know, with modern mechanized warfare. And modern mechanized warfare, industrial warfare, is a product of more Vaishya and Shudra. It's the same thing, too. You know, the draft, you recruit huge numbers of Shudras to go and force them to do the fighting. So that's why a Kshatriya, the essence of a Kshatriya is he wants to protect. Kshatriyas are by nature magnanimous, and they give shelter to people and protect them, and that's the nature of them. They're willing and to put their lives on the line to protect other people who need protection. That's the Kshatriya mentality. So the mode of passion in its pure form has this noble aspect to it. I say you don't see that. When we think of passion nowadays, mostly we see passion mixed together with a lot of ignorance, because you see the mode of passion really manifest in terms of economic activity, whereas the pure type of a passionate person, a Kshatriya, is much more interested in honor and prestige than he is in money. Money is a little ignoble. Naturally, they used it. They collected taxes and things like that, but that's not what they were really into. And they're, by nature, charitably disposed. Kshatriyas, when they get money, they redistribute it. They like to put on big shows. They like to give everybody something. They like to have sacrifices. Whereas the Vaishya is a type that did miser by nature. He doesn't give out anything unless he's sure he's going to get a bigger return somewhere. Always profit. Kshatriya is not interested in profit as much as the Vaishya is. And that's the intermediate between passion and you see there's a tinge now of passion. End of the mode of ignorance. So anyway, all this to say is that the pure passionate person is actually born among human beings, because they not qualified enough to go to the higher planets, like someone in the mode of goodness. Their evolution is not upward. But on the other hand, they're not so sinful. They sink down to the animal species of life or to the hellish planet. So generally, they tend to stay in the middle range among human beings. Well, there's lots of problems. There's lots of sinful reactions are there, but they're not that bad. Then we come to faith in the mode of passion. If they worship the demons, as I said, I find this one a little hard to understand. But that's what it says anyway. They worship demons, whereas mode of goodness, the tendency is to worship the demigods. Yeah.
Weren't they saying like in the Soviet Union where they did the Statue of Lenin? That's a good example.
Yeah. Well, we see that, but you understand, why is it that somebody who worships demons will remain in the human form of life? I don't understand. You'd think they would go to the demons. So that seems to me a little tendencies there. And we see that people in the mode of passion, a lot of times we see them worshiping demigods. I can only assume there's some Brahminical direction there too. That if left to their own devices without any Brahminical direction, the tendency would be to worship big demons. Because they exemplify that passionate mode. You see, what a demon is, I noticed this when reading this, the pastime of Prahlad Maharaj and Hiranyakashipu, is that in Western terms, Hiranyakashipu is a tragic hero. According to Aristotle, who looked at Greek tragedy and dropped out some general characteristics of tragedy, he says the hero of a tragedy, what the tragedy is about is that through his hubris, some of you may remember this stuff, through his hubris, which means pride, he challenges the gods, and his downfall is that he becomes destroyed in the process, so it always ends in his death. But through his pride, his hubris, he challenges the gods and is destroyed. And that the audience of the tragedy, seeing this, undergoes what he called a catharsis or a purification by intense emotion, so that these elements in themselves become expressed and destroyed. So if you look at that definition, that's what Hiranyakashipu is. He's a classical tragic hero. Through his ambition and his greatness, his drive, he's the epitome of the mode of passion. And the demigods come to Brahma and said, he's going to ask you for a benediction, but don't give it to him, because what he really wants and what he's telling us is he wants your post. See, that's his ambition. And so he challenges Krishna, and he's destroyed. And there's a catharsis, because Prabhupada says that Hiranyakashipu is the emblem of material desires. Desire for gold, desire for sex. And that when we sing that prayer, by here Nisringa Riddhaye Nisringa, we are praying to Lord Nisringadeva to manifest within our hearts, and with his long nails, rip up our Hiranyakashipu-like material desires. That's what happened. Bahir Nisringa, Hridaye, Nisringa is in my heart, Hridaye Nisringa. That's what we're praying to. So at any rate, this demon, is a tragic hero, and you can see it has that aspiration, to go higher and higher, challenge the gods. Or like Ravana, we can go to the heavenly kingdoms on our own, proud, be something niggard, something slavish in having to get the demigods to bring us to the heavenly kingdom. We'll get up there by our own prowess. I'd rather do it myself. So don't want to take help from anybody. So I can see why that, given its natural bent, somebody who's passionate, they would admire most a demon. I can see that. So all we can say of these Kshatriyas, all who worship demigods and stay on the human level, is they must receive some direction from the Brahmanas. They're not quite left to their own devices. But their faith, according to Bhagavatam, is rooted in fruit of work. That is, it's always based on, that's what they believe in. That's what you got to work hard in life. You ever hear it? In life, you got to work hard. First lesson, you got to work hard. All your work has to do this. I remember when I was, after my first year of college, I told my father that I was going to major in philosophy. And we were sitting at the dinner table and grabbed a fistful of bread. He said, "What are you going to do about this?" "You have to work, you know." Waved this bread in my face, you know. I didn't see any problem, you know, so my mother's going to be there. But anyway, that was a little bit passionate there. Food. Here we go. Food in the mode of passion. It's overspiced. I mean, really hot, sour, salty, pungent, dry, burning. So we see these things are there, causes distress, misery, and disease. Bhagavatam says it gives immediate pleasure to the senses. So at least that's the, you know, because sometimes that's the main aim, is just to immediately taste good and spectacular and wonderful without any real consideration of how healthy it is for you. And so on. Too much oil. You know, everything cooked in oil. Fast foods. Yeah.
Why is it that Indian food is typified as really, really spicy?
It is really, really spicy. A lot of it's in the mode of passion, too. I mean, what you think is hot, you have to go to India. I remember once I was on a train from Mathura, from Delhi to Mathura. I had my kids with me, you know, little toddlers. And we hadn't had, somehow or other, we hadn't had anything to eat for a couple of days, you know, a day or so. Like, starving. So we're on this train, and so finally we broke down, we bought some chidwa, you know, from this guy. And that stuff, I thought I had hot food, you know, in ISKCON. This stuff took off the top of your head. My poor kids, you know, they were so hungry, they were eating it, tears streamed down their eyes. They were starving, they ate it, you know, and it was just, they couldn't stop crying. It was really hot. So, you know, the hot spices of Indian food is very appropriate for a tropical country where you need that in order to digest it. You don't need it so hot here. Yeah. Really passionate food is like that. In America, what we like is not hot, we like things too salty. You know, that's a big sign of the boat of passion, also things are too salty. But people really like salty stuff. And you notice the stuff they eat has huge salt content. Big problem for everybody, you know. Cheese has huge salt content. Potato chips, everything is salted like crazy.
That is crazy.
Yeah. Anyway. So now we get into the various things of sacrifice, performed for material benefit or for the sake of pride. This word, dumba, is an interesting word which I've noted here several places. Dumba means pride or hypocrisy. hypocrisy or bluffing. Demons, they perform sacrifice in name only, Dumba Yajna. So it's for the sake of pride. No, just put on a big show that I'm performing a sacrifice, but you're not really into the pious end of it. So it's for material benefit or to make a big show of how pious you are. Sacrifice in the mode of passion. Same way with austerity, out of pride to gain respect, honor, worship. It's flickering and temporary. Charity, you want something with expectation of return, I'll get it back later somehow or other, with a desire for fruitive results, or in a grudging mood. You're giving it to the right person. Oh, all right. Don't bother me anymore. Renunciation. Somebody in the mode of ignorance renounces his prescribed duties out of illusion. He doesn't even know what his prescribed duties are. He doesn't even know what he's supposed to be. He's given them up and he doesn't think he has. He's doing all the wrong things he thinks is what he's supposed to be doing. A person in the mode of passion knows what he's supposed to be doing, but it's just too much trouble or it's going to cause too much work or like that. It's going to hurt. So knowledge, here's the knowledge in the mode of passion is mental speculation, theoretical knowledge, physics, chemistry, all this stuff is in the mode of passion. You're just interested in the material nature of things and don't anywhere seeing the underlying spiritual energy. You can classify all the animals, you can classify all the plants, you can study how they work. And it never occurs to you it's the same kind of living entity in all these different bodies. But they're all equal, they're all alive. Never occurred to you. So knowledge based on duality produces many theories and doctrines by dint of mundane logic and mental speculation. That's typical mode of passion. Action in the mode of passion is clear. Desire to enjoy the results. And perform with great effort by one seeking to gratify desires and acting from a sense of false ego. I am the enjoyer, I am the controller. The worker, the karta, when it works, is attached to work and to the fruits, desiring to enjoy the fruits, greedy, always envious, instead of other people, but they'll succeed more than he is, always worried that somebody's going to take what he has, pass him. Impure, moved by joy and sorrow. See, the one in the mode of goodness that is not disturbed when he works, whether there's success or failure, just is unwavering. That is not affect. He's steady in success or failure. But one in the mode of passion, you know, is elated and downcast, you know. You're like, you want to see something, you're going to watch, you know, sometimes they show films on TV at the stock market. But what the emotional changes people go through, you know, when it breaks 3,000, everybody goes berserk, and then with the drops, you know, they're like all morose. I mean, the roller coaster ups and downs of emotions that people go through according to the Dow Jones Industrial Average is amazing. Just amazing. Understanding, buddhi. You cannot distinguish between religion and irreligion, between action that ought to be done and ought not to be done. So they're not obstinately fixed in just the opposite, like somebody who's in the mode of ignorance. But they get confused all the time. Can't be sure. Well, you could look at it this way, you could look at it that way. Maybe this is all right. This has a good result. A lot of times, the mode of passion is that a person will consider the philosophy of the end justifies the means. They think the end is good, then they'll use all kinds of irreligious means to get it, and they can, will not be able to distinguish what's right and what's wrong.
Luke,
in
Luke
1,
I think
you want
to Abraham
started
by
we need a semester on that question. Well, I think you're always responsible for your actions. Prabhupada told us when devotees blind and followed an authority in New York right in the wrong direction, Prabhupada told him they shouldn't have done it. He said it's actually good that they stayed and served and kept on the movement, didn't leave, didn't abandon the project. But they should have known that what he was doing was wrong. And Prabhupada said, you never surrender your intelligence. What that means is that actually if you understand what surrender is you surrender with your intelligence. You don't surrender your intelligence. The act of surrender is an act of buddhi. It's an act of discrimination to see this is where I put my faith. So, in general, you know, you should be regarded as a human being with intelligence. Well, some people don't have a lot of intelligence. It's true. Other people have more, but you should be regarded as a human being with intelligence. And my position is that that intelligence should be satisfied by authorities who can explain to you why it is that this is being done, that is being done. And if you see things differently, then it's necessary to communicate this. I don't think there's any... it can be done without committing any offense. Now, you know, when things go on and develop, problems develop because of irreconcilable differences, vision, then that's a whole other topic, how to do about that. That varies a lot from case to case. Generally, we're supposed to have levels of appeal. But a lot of times it works, sometimes it doesn't. But generally, you can trust Krishna that he's not going to mess you up. You're a sincere devotee. No, as far as I heard it, and I was there when it happened, close by, was that you've got I didn't hear that Prabhupada ever said one thing to younger devotees and one thing to older devotees. I never heard that story. This was involving Bali Mardan in New York when they were, you know, putting clam sauce on the altar. I mean, it was really wild. It was really wild. And what was going on, the deviations that were taking place in the treatment of the devotees, the distortions of the philosophy, and stuff like that. I'm just telling you the way that I heard it, and I heard it, you know, right after Prabhupada went there and talked to them from the people directly involved. Anyway, that's what I got out of it. Let's finish up here. So it's about intelligence, then you know, see, intelligence is the direction of the spiritual master. It comes from Krishna, it is. But Prabhupada says that the spiritual master explains the philosophy and why things are being done. sometimes you can't tell exactly what the whole picture is, but generally it's to be satisfied. Determination. The determination is that one holds fast to the results. That's the determination. I want it. I want it. I want it. So then the happiness and the mode of passion, so-called happiness, is based on sense gratification, arises from contact between the senses and their objects. And this is the one that's like nectar in the beginning and poison in the end. Because there's immediate pleasure, but that immediate pleasure, Krishna tells us, is the cause of all suffering. Yehi sam sparsha jap bhoga dukkha yonaya evate. That contact between the senses and the object is the cause of all misery in the material world. Because you become attached to temporary things, and therefore you suffer when those temporary things come to an end. And the connection is temporary. And also because that contact forces you to identify yourself with the material body more and more, and therefore you have to suffer all the miseries of material existence just for a few cheap thrills. What you got to pay for, the few cheap thrills in material life, you have to pay for with birth, death, old age, and disease. That's an awful high price. The people in the mode of passion do it. Those who worship Krishna in the mode of passion, that is, the worship itself is in the mode of passion, they worship by prescribed duties with the hope of gaining material benefit. So they use they perform their prescribed duties worshiping Krishna, but they want something in return. Devotional service in the mode of passion is by a separatist, that is, he has his own interests separate from the interests of Krishna, and also wants to separate himself off from the other devotees, who's superior, better, more advanced, with a motive for material enjoyment, fame, and opulence. When the mode of passion increases, the demons become stronger. The state of consciousness that is actually produced by the mode of passion is dreaming sleep. And the residence of a person, preferred residence of one in the mode of passion is urban life. It says gramya, which means a kind of town, a village, what to speak of a modern city. Passionate. Okay, any questions about that? We got to the mode of passion passionately enough. One thing. Yeah. Yeah, when we talk about transcendence, I guess we'll talk about dovetailing some of the activities. One thing we got to know about dovetailing is sense gratification cannot be dovetailed. This is a direct quotation. People think that sense, in other words, I am the enjoyer, but I'm enjoying it for Krishna. No. Activities are dovetailed, talents are dovetailed, propensities are dovetailed, but not sense gratification. You can dovetail your ability to cook, your liking to cook for Krishna, but you cannot offer him the remnants. If you offer nice food stuff to Krishna with the desire of enjoying, that's passion. Yeah. Yeah, but it'll be a long time. You'll get a few fringe benefits, but you're gonna have a hard time because you commit many offenses against the devotees, against the spiritual master, against the holy name. So
also derive benefit from it.
Yeah, simply by hearing, they can develop faith. Someone who's by nature in the mode of passion and mode of ignorance. If somebody in the mode of ignorance somehow or other just develops faith in a devotee and just serves that devotee, the person in the mode of ignorance will not have so much intelligence to discriminate, but somehow or other it happens that they start to serve a pure devotee. And service attitude is there, does not make advancement. So that won't be in the mode of, they don't have any desire to commit violence or anything like that. But because in the mode of ignorance, not so much intelligent, pretty much their activities require direction. So there's no direction, everything becomes a little purposeless. If there's direction, they can go on. And somebody in the mode of passion, they can do some great endeavor, but completely give up. The results of the work. It's okay. So that's what Krishna's teaching in the Bhagavad Gita, Brahmin country of Vaishya Shudra. He says there's a statement in here, everyone, the whole world from the demigods down is under the influence of the modes of nature. Everybody's under the influence of the modes of nature. Very rare that there's a being in this world that's not. So when anyone begins devotional service, they're going to be situated somewhere in the modes of material nature. But how can you do that work? Well, you have to work according to your psychophysical conditioning, but you give up the results. Sodom's unique case. Sodom is almost but it depends. There's different ways. If you want to get the most out of Sodom, you should be thinking of Krishna. And you should think that this tastes so good because Krishna has eaten it and it's mixed with his saliva. Things like that to get more out of it. You mean is it all or nothing or a matter of degree? It's either prasadam or not prasadam or?
No, not that it's prasadam or not prasadam. Sometimes they say on a rocky octocart, prasadam, everyone's ecstatic, everyone's dancing, prasadam gets thrown down, and the consequences are weird, and you know, you can make a lot of advancement because they're not like the mood you're in when you're eating it or how it's offered. But the prasadam is made like, fall on the floor, seven minutes to make the whole over, get the food salad cut up, and then there's some seeds in there, and it's not done with loving devotion, but it's offered. And for John, you have different levels for you in your consciousness that you use.
What do you think? It has different levels.
He's also teaching.
You can tell.
And there were workers in one of the Indian temples, and they cooked the
How much Krishna loved it and accepted it, that much more it causes advancement in the devotees. That's why in some ways the most important person in the temple, the cook. And the people that clean the kitchen. Prabhupada says everything Krishna will not accept, anything cooked in a dirty kitchen, you know, dirty pot, stuff like that. So, we used to have the philosophy that we offered everything first to Prabhupada because Krishna wouldn't accept anything that we offered to Prabhupada. I think Krishna would accept. But yeah, the more cleanliness and regulation and love and devotion goes into it, the more ecstatic people are when they honor it. Don't eat prasad, they honor it. Think that too, honoring prasad. That is different.